Hi there. Welcome to Unstuck, the podcast where we have conversations about areas in our life where we may have been or are stuck. Whether that is relationally, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, and often because we are intricately connected human beings, it is a few of these areas all at once. I'm the host of Unstuck, Dr. Emily Stone. I'm a marriage and family therapist, as well as an ordained minister, and issues related to growth, formation, and development are passions of mine. I love having conversations with people and can't wait to share with you some amazing people like you, and their stories. In this podcast, I'm having a conversation with Dana Dimmick about anxiety. Dana is a wife, mom of three, professional decorator in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, and a good friend to so many. She is witty and honest. We cover a lot of ground, from mothering to spiritual trauma to big existential ideas like having a voice, along with practical ways she manages her anxiety. Whether you have struggled with anxiety or not, I think you are going to love her and enjoy her insights so much. I think there's a chance you will hear yourself in so much of what she shares because it hits on the anxiety of just being human. So a few things I learned is this is like my cheat sheet. And last time I had it over here, mm-hmm. So don't look at it. I had it over here and
then your voice would fade out.
Oh, well then I just never looked at it. Thankfully I remembered everything. but I was like, oh, and I didn't want to make any paper rustling sounds right. And all that. So another thing I learned, so when I edit it. So I've spent hours today, when they were playing, it was so beautiful outside.
It was gorgeous today.
Yes. Yeah. So the kids were running. Mm. All the doors are open. Probably had about 10 kids here.
From amazing.
Ages 3 to like 13. And they were just all out climbing trees. They probably shouldn't be climbing.
Amazing.
let me show you.
It's perfect.
Yeah. So I could see them,
that's
know?
That's awesome.
And I just kept working. So here's Lillian up in the tree.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You can get a...
That's so great.
She and her two little friends were playing Not Catching Fire.
Mockingjay?
Wait, what's the first
Hunger
one?
Games?
Hunger Games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of
fun.
So
they've read those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
I wasn't sure what age is.
Yeah, when did Lillian first read those?
I don't think the book is quite as horrible to read as it is just to sort of see some of it in the...
We watched the movies too.
You did, yeah. It's fine. I am not judging you as a parent. I'm curious about
right.
when these things happen.
Yeah, we watched Catching Fire 2 weekends ago, actually.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, she's been asking me. Eloise has seen all of them.
That's
and she's
the
been
third
asking.
One?
That's the second one.
The second one.
Yeah. So maybe she hasn't... No, I think she's read all of them.
Okay.
So Emmett is reading... He is reading Percy Jackson series right now.
Oh, yeah.
And so we watched the... Well, no. He hasn't seen the second one yet. He's read through on book four. So he's, like, waffling between them, the Harry Potter series. He's on book four for that one, too.
Nice.
Yeah. Please be comfortable.
I'm super excited about the boys reading those.
Oh.
Like, I really want to read them. We might start Harry Potter next.
Yeah.
We just are finishing up a really sweet book called The Wild Robot. Have you heard of this?
No. You told me that last one was... Where the red
yeah friends. We were yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to lend it to you if you're interested in it. Hillary would probably love it. I don't know if you guys read out like
not a whole lot
right
yeah
because she's the third kid we're still I'm sorry fourth kid you know we're still energetic about reading with kid number one.
We do read and it's helped me because
no, I get it.
Okay, great. All right, so
And okay. Then I'll also say that my two eldest children were comparing their penis sizes tonight at supper,
what?
So that was nice.
No, they were not.
Oh, yes. And have before, and maybe you don't have this because Emmett's your only boy, have before had sword fights with their penises.
No, they haven't.
Yes. Regular occurrence.
What?
For a while. We've totally kiboshed it, so it hasn't happened in a while. But no, they're both sitting there in between the broccoli course and the sweet potato course with their PJs pulled down, like stretching it out, trying to decide who had the longer penis.
No.
And I have totally accepted that this is normal
okay. Boy
behavior and that
yep.
I try not to overreact. I'm just like, nope, not at the table. Not ever, actually. Keep your penis in your pants. And we move right along, you know?
That's hilarious. I can't imagine that. I'm trying to think if there's anything that my girls have... No.
Nothing like that.
No.
I know.
No. Mm-mm.
Maybe later.
Grades. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope not. I don't think girls do the same.
I don't think so either. We're more like, well, have you heard, I read it, even, there's even a study or some studies that have been done on it, that girls are more likely to look for things we have the same. And so, I have the same shoes as you do.
Like connection points. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And boys are more likely to one-up each other when they meet. That's how they, like...
connect.
Like, boys connect by one-upping, and girls connect by seeing what's the same.
That's really interesting.
I know. And then once someone told me that about that research, I just watch. And I watch myself, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. And then it'd be interesting to see how the genders... do that with each other too,
right?
You know, anyways, that's not this podcast,
right? Different podcast.
Okay. All right, so I like to start by talking about how I met you.
Okay.
And I don't know if you are going to remember any of this or not, but I have some very clear memories because it was a pretty traumatic, life-changing event for me. So, like,
moving is awful.
Right. So we were moving to Charlotte from Tennessee, and we're moving and packing up our house, and my stepfather was running for state representative, and he won.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. And so I was at his party. Like, it was the election night, and they had this party at this restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I start getting these texts from this woman.
And you're like, she's crazy.
North Carolina. Saying to me, hey, this is Dana Demick. You don't know me, but I'm organizing food for you. And I need to know if you and your family have any allergies.
Oh.
So thoughtful. So thoughtful. So I was like, that's what I remember. And then the next part, I don't know if you said it then or if it as I was getting here. You pretty much told me, and you remember, I've never met you. Right. I've never talked to you. I think I did call you.
I creeped you out.
I think I called you back at the party. And you were like, so I'm going to come get your kids. I'm going to come get your kids so you can unpack. And I'm like, oh.
I'm surprised you ever spoke to me. That's the weirdest thing ever.
But you did. You came, you drove here, and you were pregnant, like very pregnant with Callan.
I just looked very pregnant because it was my third pregnancy.
Okay, well, you had...
You know, we had just moved.
Oh my gosh.
We had just moved into our house.
The one you're in right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we were only supposed to be there for 2 weeks and then ended up staying 2 months. And then we moved out. Okay.
Oh, and then you
gutted
lived...
it, and then moved back in 6 months later.
That's right, because you lived at the Hendersons for a little while.
So we had just moved in, and moving was so utterly overwhelming and depressing, like for me, that I developed this new resolve that whenever I knew somebody that I knew it was moving, I would do something. I would at least do something.
Yeah.
And then moving through states, and I couldn't imagine doing what y'all were doing.
Well,
it was
could
so
tell.
Disorienting and horrible for me. I mean, truly horrible.
Yeah. Moving's awful.
It's awful.
It is. It's really awful. And I don't know. I mean, I think there is something particularly awful about moving across to a different town or state.
Sure.
And I think it's just as awful moving down the street, packing up your house. And
I don't think it's just as awful, but I was surprisingly undone by it.
Yeah. You mean you think every load's going to be the last one, and then you
not
can
even
keep
the,
finding
the
more
logistics
things.
and practicalities of it, but the emotional impact that it had on me was surprising.
Okay.
So it just gave me a lot of compassion. So I was probably...
Oh, I picked up on that. I could tell that you had a lot of empathy. And now that you say that, like, I knew... You maybe even told me that you had just moved. And I was like, oh, okay. She's...
That's why she's crazy.
No, she's trying... She's given to me what she would have loved or loved, I don't know, for people to give to you.
And we definitely had help, but...
Yeah.
It still was... It was awful.
Yeah, so you had your two older ones mm-hmm. that were still so little. And I just remember you in your car, you got all of my kids. Maybe Eloise stayed here with me.
Eloise stayed.
Yeah, because she took all three of my younger ones. Yeah, and Hillary was only two.
Fit.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, and you just took them off and gave me some time here. And I remember saying to John, I just let this lady that I don't know.
I don't even know take my kids.
Is that okay? Is that okay? Am I okay as a mom that I just did that? I'm not sure.
I know.
Maybe it's just a sign of how far gone I am. No. I'm like, sure, bye. Bye.
Don't forget to bring them back.
In? Yeah. 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 But that was, that was a really great gift. So those are my first memories of you. But since then, I know I've gotten to know just more parts of you, and I know you're a mom of three boys, and tell me, and I know you do designing, so can you just tell a little bit more about that work that you do?
Yeah, so I call it decorating because I think designing has all kinds of implications attached to it, and perhaps I'm downplaying so that I don't disappoint people. But I mostly want to come in and help make your space beautiful.
Okay.
I think of a designer as somebody who would come in and be able to draw your plans for a renovation do more technical stuff. And I don't enjoy the technical stuff, so I just kind of opted out of it. I really enjoy the aesthetic stuff and helping.
Well, you're really good at it.
Well, you're very kind. You I are. Don't know. But I really, really enjoy helping create beauty because I think beauty creates peace.
Mm-hmm.
And then peace helps you physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Like, to me, if your space is not at peace and there's not a measure of beauty in it, then you're probably not living as like spaciously as you could be internally. As well as your physical. So, I mean, I just think they're all tied together. Your physical space impacts your mental, emotional space internally.
So I tend to think about that every time that you come over.
Oh no. And I never ever want people to think that. And I don't ever think about people's spaces unless they've asked me to.
Okay.
Right. Like, truly. Well, because that. It's not my... I'm just happy to be at someone else's house. You know, sure. I mean, if you ask me to come into your space, I will start thinking about it.
Yeah.
When I'm in it. But I'd never, ever do that.
Yeah.
So I used to clean houses for a living. That's what I did for 4 years. And people would be like, oh, don't look, it's so messy. And I'm like, not my job. I'm not here to clean your house. I don't care how dirty it is. You know, it's the same thing. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I get that in the sense that because I'm a therapist, sometimes people think...
You're analyzing people something. All the time.
Yeah. And I usually am just wanting to be. Yeah.
Right.
Hang out, be friends or whatever. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get that. Yeah. I'm kind of teasing, but I know that you would have a lot to offer. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So designing and I know wife and three kids. And I think what comes to my mind most about you besides, you're also an avid reader, which I love. And you have this love for language that I think is unique to you. And I just really appreciate how good at asking questions you are. So yeah,
that's a nice compliment.
Yeah. I feel like you are a question asker extraordinaire. So which I think is a gift.
I feel like I have friends who are incredible question askers and it always makes me think and wish I were better at asking questions.
Yeah.
So I don't see that in myself. So that's an unexpected and, appreciated comment.
Yeah. Well, I've been on the receiving end of it. So yeah. So I asked you to come talk with me and I gave you a topic and I really wanted to hear more about your experience with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'd heard you talk about it before in another space, and I just really appreciated the way that you talked about it. I did see Emily Zimmer this morning, I guess, when working out, or I don't remember, yesterday or something. And she asked, I told her you were coming to talk, and you know, she did the other podcast with me so far. And she asked what we were talking about, and I said anxiety, and she was like, why are we so anxious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Sarah Henderson and I were talking one day, this was years ago, and I told her that I just have this sort of constant low-level anxiety, and it's not tied to any event. It's non-event specific. It's just like white noise internally. And she looked at me like I was crazy, and I found out later that she had never experienced that before. She connected more with like worry. Like she would have worry about like specific events, but had never had this sense of anxiousness. And then maybe in the last year or two, she came to me and she said, do you remember that time when you told me, well, I have it now and it's awful. And I remember thinking that must be awful. And now I know it is. And I was trying to think on the way over here if I can remember a time when I didn't have it. And I can't.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I've always had it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, definitely through middle school and high school and college, and it, like, there's not a time I can remember. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I was a rule follower, and I wanted, like, and then I'm a peacemaker. And so in my childhood, that definitely was, I wanted peace, and I wanted everybody to be happy, and there wasn't a lot of that. And so I can imagine, although I don't have a specific memory, that I was probably anxious as a child as well. And that would have been more specific stuff. And definitely I can remember in middle school and high school and even in college having like general low level anxiety, like white noise, but then like very, identifiable anxieties, the things that were worrying to me, but not just worrying, but causing also an amplification of the anxiety. Okay. So
when you say anxiety, when you talk about the white noise anxiety, as well as the amplification of it, where in your body do you feel it?
It resides like down in my belly, in my gut.
Okay.
But sort of like in the center, it's not... it's strange. It has a location, which I never would have, I mean, it doesn't really even make sense to me because I do think it's mostly in my head, but it has a sensation that exists in my central belly.
I have struggled with anxiety as well, and I feel like mine is up in my chest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I will get tense, and I get lots of tension headaches and things like that, but I don't think that's where it lives for me as much as just, like, in my belly.
Yeah. I think I have felt it down in my belly as well, and I just feel it around my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of where I think I carry it.
Hmm.
So you said, and that was actually something I was going to ask you about, if you remember how far back you've struggled with anxiety. And so you don't remember a time when you didn't.
I don't.
Okay. And I know we talked the other day that you don't have
memories. I don't.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't have great memories even of my adult life. I'm better. Like if someone tells a story, it might trigger something in me, or I might see something, but I'm not great at just recalling things off the top of my head.
Okay.
Which this is a total tangent, but I read this thing one time that said like your memories are very tied to your family stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that if your family isn't telling a story, then your memories are sort of shallower. They're less imprinted. And so with my boys, I've been really intentional about telling and retelling some of their stories already. I mean, they're 5, 3, and 2,
yeah.
But we have already sort of inside jokes and stories that we tell.
Yeah.
Because it's important to me that they have memories about who our family is and what we right. did and how they fit into it. Identity mm-hmm. and also just connection point with your family. Like it was in an article that was talking about how do you build a family that actually enjoys each other, okay. which is not something I had modeled. So it's something I have to study.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I think so. You said that you were a peacemaker and you wanted everyone to be happy. And it seemed like you were tying that to your anxiety in some way.
Well, for me, I've never liked conflict. I still don't like conflict. It's very difficult for me, you know, with the marches that this past weekend and all the stuff around the election, my anxiety has skyrocketed in part because I am genuinely anxious, not white noise anxious, but genuinely anxious and slightly appalled, but, yeah. But also then that people are conflicting and not doing that particularly well mm-hmm. also makes my anxiety skyrocket, even though I think that we have to have conflict in order, you know, to reach true peace. I mean, in my marriage, I am the conflict maker. Like I bring conflict up and I make sure that we're talking about it. But I don't like it.
Okay.
But Doug is even more conflict avoidant than I am. And I have seen the effects of conflict avoidance and I don't want that.
Yeah.
There just was a lot of uncertainty. We moved around a lot. You know, anytime she could get enough money to get us to someplace to live someplace better.
Okay.
She would move us. And I don't remember, but I mean, it could have been that we were moving back and forth just because but I just always remember a lot of uncertainty. There was never, just a real sense of like, here's where we are and here's where we're going to be.
Okay.
In my growing up. So I don't know. I don't know if it's Sylvia Boorstein, she talks about that everybody is sort of wired in a particular way to have, like you might be a worrier, you might have anxiety, you might have, anger, you might like we're sort of preset with some wirings for things that are, you know, and she would say quote unquote negative. 'Cause she says, if you just acknowledge them as what they like, that they're just a thing instead of a thing that's bad. And don't put like shame on top of the thing in addition to having the thing.
Right.
Like her example is she said, you would never say like, oh, I have brown hair. Like you would never sort of shame yourself for having brown hair. And if you can just look at yourself and say, well, I tend to worry. And instead of adding shame on top of that, just be like, well, what could I do instead of worry? Right. I could take a deep breath. I could look around and, you know, admire the view from where I'm sitting. Like if you could sort of find some handles to hold on to that would help you accept that characteristic of yourself, then you have the potential to make greater peace with it.
Do you feel like you've done that with your anxiety?
So I try all the time. And it is like, that is one thing I was thinking about earlier today is just how much I am either thinking about and trying to alleviate anxiety, or I am realizing that I'm coming, like I'm sort of catching my breath out of realizing that I've not like actually breathed because I've been, you know, anxious. And again, it's not tied to anything. It's not like I'm anxious about this test or I'm anxious about, I do get occasionally anxious about a specific thing.
Like the election or the marches or
Or a big project that I have coming up. You know, I have a big installation that I'm doing on Monday. I'm a little nervous around it. Mm-hmm. And so I have a little anxiety around it, but like that's just feels different to me than what is sort of constant in my body and in my psyche, I guess.
I think what that reminds me of is a couple of different concepts that have been helpful for me. And I think for clients I've worked with, you know, it's all, you always try it on yourself first, right?
Right.
Right. And the first one, just as a simple idea that I think is really what, just another way of saying what you were saying, that you can be anxious about being anxious.
Oh, totally.
And you can be depressed about being depressed.
Yes.
And that just
amplifies it.
Yes. It makes it worse.
It does. It makes it worse.
And when you can just take a deep breath and say, okay, this is just where this is where I am,
mm-hmm.
and try to make peace with it. It,
mm-hmm.
it kind of, it's like when you're anxious about being anxious or depressed about being depressed or whatever it is, angry about being angry, it's mm-hmm. like you're kind of just wound up so tight, and something about releasing that first part of it
mm-hmm.
just makes a little bit of space, and maybe that's just enough space.
Right.
To work with it in right. some way, or to care for yourself in some way.
Yeah.
The other piece that is helpful for me is, and again, I think this is very, very much related to what you were saying, is to see it as, well, you were saying about seeing it as a part of yourself. Also maybe to see it as, yeah, a part of you, but not you. So I have a piece of me or part of me that's anxious or struggles with anxiety, but I am not anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe even that part of me that gets anxious is actually trying to serve me well in some way. It's trying to help mm-hmm. me. It's maybe it has developed to serve me in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think things like that develop when we're very young and they served us really well. And then later on in life, they become liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe being hypervigilant as a child because one of your parents was sick or depressed or an alcoholic or whatever
mm-hmm.
helped you survive. And then there later on in life, that hypervigilance, I mean, it may still serve some purpose, but it may bring with it some liabilities
right.
too.
Right.
So in that sense, trying to kind of almost externalize the thing, whatever it is, and try to understand what purpose it's trying to serve for mm-hmm. you instead of it being the enemy.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense. Like, so if I go in and I'm depressed and I'm going to therapy, I'm here because I want you to help me get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the first thing I need to do is actually get to know it.
Hmm.
And get to know the role it's played in my life. Mm-hmm. It is playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe as I get to know it a little bit more, I'm getting to know myself, and that helps it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But just, no, that's interesting because, yeah. you know, in terms of trying to alleviate it or get rid of it, I've read and tried, I mean, so many things. You know, I regularly do deep belly breaths, you know, because it is like one of the...
I find myself wanting to do it now.
Deep breath.
Right.
Right, just let it
do it all together.
Let it go, right? Because it does have physical manifestations as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly anxiety or my anxious sort of just personality traits. Like, I want to do things well when I do them, but I don't always know how to do that or how to do all of them. And so I will get stymied and very easily overwhelmed because I'm not quite sure what to do and what to do first yeah. because I really just want to do it both the right way,
right.
which is a problem. Like, even as I say it, and I'm like, that's a problem. Like, I have this, I just want to do it the right way. And then I want to do it well, really well. And so those two tendencies definitely handhold and piggyback with the anxiety. But in the midst of that and in learning, you know, I do the deep breathing and I try to do yoga, and I've read a lot about how anxiety and depression sort of start in your gut. So I'm very conscious of what I eat, and I try to take, you know, just a hot ton of supplements right now. I'm meeting
with
this.
Which you've given me some.
Right.
At your house when I've been there. You've right? sent me home with some.
Yeah.
During my cabinet.
I'm on a whole new round. I'm actually seeing a functional medicine doctor right now who's trying to help me.
Awesome.
But it's all like, you know, shooting the north wind. Like, I have no idea what I'm aiming at exactly, or if I've actually hit it when I do it, if that makes sense. And so that has its own level of anxiety because it all costs money,
right.
a great deal of energy.
Right.
in remembering to do everything I'm supposed to be doing. And so it feels in some ways like it adds to my anxiety to try to beat my anxiety.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
And does it give a focus for it? Like, okay, I'm going to have it anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. Except that, so sometimes it's so manageable and it's just there and present and, you know, I can shake it off a little. I can lie on the floor and do some stretching and deep breathing and feel okay. And other times it's so loud that it's, you know, it just undoes me. And in those seasons, and they tend to be seasons, not just like a day, you know, I'm willing to do just about anything. Like I need it to go away.
Right.
I don't know, you know, massage helps some. That's super manageable. I mean, I can get a massage every day, right? There's no cost in time or money on that. So, you know, I'm instituting that policy.
I should have mentioned in the beginning how good at sarcasm you are.
Right. working out alleviates it temporarily, but I've noticed that it amps it up later.
You know, I had a friend tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of reading one time that said that for my body and personality type, what I really needed to do was be a vegetarian who only did yoga. And I'm like, oh, well, that didn't work for me. Right? Like, just...
Why not?
In my life, like, who I identify with is not that. But I have noticed that I'll work out, I feel really great, and I pay for it later.
Okay.
In feeling pretty depleted rather than long-term energized by it. I'm very energized the day of, you know, I love my boot camp days, but the day after is almost always backlash.
Okay.
So, you know, it's all those things. And I mean, I'm definitely not perfect with diet, but I'm much more conscious of food and where it comes from and how it affects your body than I think the average person who's not a dietitian is, or nutritionist rather. And that, you know, is overwhelming and anxiety provoking because it's all based on reading I've done, not research I've done. I'm not like a hands-on researcher. I'm not going to, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that, then it's, again, it just feels like you're aiming at something you can't see and you'll never know if you hit. So
I think when you, and I want to ask you about the diet and things you've learned, but before we get to that, as you were talking about this constant just trying, I think what it reminded me of is this idea I have that you just constantly try things.
Right.
And it, different things work at different times. And so it's a constant process of renegotiating your self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what it is. And I know, and then too, you know, I do think that anxiety has multiple components to it. That it is biological, it is developmental, it is psychological, social. There's so many cultural, you know, there's so many pieces to it. And I don't think we can always, so there's going to be lots of different ways to manage it.
Right.
Too. So I think, yeah, I mean, obviously I believe in therapy and I believe in different things you can do within that context. And sometimes that can feel like, yeah, you know, you can retrain your brain. And I don't know if you've ever done much mindfulness exercises. It's kind of it's related to meditation, but I find it to be really, really helpful. You can do those different kinds of things. You can go back and talk about your childhood and try to do some restructuring with all of that. And then sometimes you hit it from the forefront by just trying to get more sunshine and yeah, you can't fix it all from the back door.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know if you ever completely finish that journey because you just keep it. There's a theory in therapy called narrative therapy. And this, just in a nutshell, there is this idea behind it that you restory your past.
Yeah.
And so it's by telling your story and you understand it in certain ways. And ideally with that theory, you bring in lots of people who have different perspectives on your story.
Interesting.
That contribute to your restoring.
And so that would be really life-giving, you hope, right? Because you never see yourself the way that other people see you.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But that concept reminds me of two things. You know Kevin Kling?
No.
Oh, he's great. He's a writer and a storyteller and a...
I always learn about new authors.
Funny
every
man.
Every time I meet with you.
Well, I learn about all of them from This American Life or On Being.
Okay. Which I listen to.
First heard
I
him.
Must not take as good of notes as you do.
Well, I loved his interview and so I've listened to it no fewer than 12
was
or 15
Was he on This
times.
American Life or On Being?
On Being.
Okay.
But he was born with one of his arms was not fully developed. And so he only ever had one fully developed arm into adulthood. And then at some point in his adulthood, he had a motorcycle accident and lost the use of his fully functional arm.
I think I did hear this interview, but this is helpful because I don't remember.
Well, and in the process of, he got, you know, very depressed during the process of physical therapy and trying to relearn how to do everything. And he was meeting with a counselor or a therapist. I'm not exactly sure what nomenclature they use, but and that person said to him, "I want you to start telling yourself a different story about what happened." Because the story he was telling himself, at least this is the way I understood him telling the story, is that he almost died and he was pretty fixated on that. He was losing sleep. He was very depressed, very anxious, and just felt this sense of, like, I could have died, I almost died, I could have died, I almost died. And the therapist was like, you can't focus on that anymore. You need to tell yourself a different story. You're riding the motorcycle, everything's fine, you got to where you're going, and nothing bad ever happened. And that I'm doing a bad job of telling his story. But it helped. It enabled his mind, or his spirit, or whatever it was, it was like gnawing on that bone to kind of set it down and walk away. And he had a lot.
Yeah. Cause I think the way, and I see this, I've been seeing this everywhere. And now we're talking about it here, but that just the idea that the way we tell our story affects the way we see our world.
Yes.
And then it affects our actions and our behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And you know, another interesting, I don't know why this is reminding me of that, but of this thing I'm about to say, but, my anxiety is almost always, quiet when I'm with other people, like when I'm talking and engaged and not by myself engaged. Cause when I'm by myself engaged, I'm still like, it's quiet enough, I guess, internally that I still am connecting with that. But when I'm with people and, in a social setting or in a work setting that's like social and positive. It's one of the few times when it's quiet.
Okay.
So that's also, you know, always been interesting to me.
Well, it makes me think of two things. One thing I want to say, and then something I want to ask following up on that. I can relate to that a great deal. I consider myself more introverted and I need balance.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have too much going on or I've been around people too much, I really need to be by myself for a little while. And there are certain days of the week I'm by myself a lot.
And it's too much.
It's too much. Yeah. By the end of the day, especially if something's been going on that's bothered me, by the end of the day, I have really worked it up in my mind.
Right.
And it's, you know, our mind's just so dark.
Yeah.
It's so dark. And I know this and I'm learning it more and more about myself, but if I will just go outside or go do something, it really doesn't even matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I guess what I wanted to ask you then is, do you see yourself as being more introverted or extroverted?
You know, I tested extroverted when I took, we took the Myers-Briggs several times, no, at least twice in college.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I tested extroverted then.
Who doesn't test extroverted in college, though?
Oh, I did. Two of my roommates.
Oh, okay.
Hardcore introverts.
Really? Yes.
Okay.
I scored off the charts in college.
You did.
Yes. And then since then, it's always been introvert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'd take it in.
I think, I think I ride that center line pretty hard.
Yeah.
And in different seasons of my life, you know, this season of being home with littles and, especially when they were babies, and particularly with Asher and Ransom, less so with Callan because I had slightly older children that just needed to get out and about. Like, I found the being at home with a baby very isolating and depressing. It was not good for my personality, for my, like, well. But now, what I've also learned, like, not even just now, but in the course of parenting, and I've not been doing it nearly as long, but I've learned that I can't go into a social situation with my kids just to be in a social situation. Like, I don't go to the Breathe play dates. I don't really want to go hang out with another mom and their kids unless it's a place where I know my kids will be pretty independent.
I noticed about you, because I remember when we first moved here, I remember wanting to get together, and I picked that up right away, that's just not something you like to do.
It's very depleting for me, because I feel, especially if I'm at someone else's house, not always, I just feel like I have to watch them and instruct them and be on them, but I'm wanting to have a conversation, but I can't start a thought and finish it.
Right.
And I'm very, you know, it's very disjointed, and I'll leave even though I'll say that that's what I want, because it is half of what I want.
Right.
But the whole of what I want is to connect and have an actual conversation.
Yeah.
And less have the desire to be with lots of people, and more my desire is to be with a smaller group of people where there's better conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I saw Crystal posting on Facebook about the whole staying up too late just to do you do that?
Don't you?
Oh, of course I do.
Yes. Doesn't every mother of littles do that?
Oh, and I sacrifice sleep for a long time.
Except when I can't. And then I was relating her post to Doug, and I was saying, you know, ha ha ha, isn't this what we always do? Until I can't, and then I go to bed at 8:30. Like,
I wish I could go to bed at 8:30.
Days or, you know, certain days. Well, it's not because I necessarily want to, but I'll just occasionally hit a wall, and I'm collapse. Like, I literally.
I think if you can go to bed at 8:30 and go to sleep, do it. How do you think your anxiety, or do you think, and if you do, how do you think your anxiety's changed as you have gotten older?
I don't know that it itself has changed. But some of the things that used to be that had anxiety tied to them as an event or as a thing, more and more of those go away every year.
Okay.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
It doesn't alleviate so far the general anxiety, but some of the things that would spike my anxiety before. Some of that is just, you know, I feel like in a lot of your life until you're a post-college adult, there's a lot that you don't get to say or control, even in college. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just sort of almost required to do and be in certain scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those scenarios were anxiety provoking for me. And so the farther I got into my post-college adult life, the more I've chosen.
You have more choice.
Yeah, more choice power. And more understanding that those things aren't the only option, that makes sense, you know?
Okay. Well, related to that question, how has your anxiety changed, or if it has, how has it changed with your different roles in life?
Yeah, in some senses, after Asher was born, I definitely had some postpartum depression, which I think is in some ways linked to that sort of proclivity that anxiety represents. And so I did some medicine for a while, and I did it after each of my deliveries for about a year, all of it for about a year. After each of the boys were born.
You took medication for about a year? Okay.
I did. And I've recently, like in the last week, thought maybe I should do that again. It seems like the white noise level is getting louder. Mm. But I've also been thinking about what are some things that I could maybe change logistically to maybe lower the anxiety. So I guess what I would say is that the number of different roles, I think, has upped the sound, like the noise level of the anxiety, just feeling like I'm not necessarily doing any one of them particularly well.
Okay.
Makes me feel...
like feeling stretched too thin?
Feeling guilty.
Okay. Yeah.
And feeling, unable or kind of subpar to be and do all the things I would like to be and do for all the people that I would like to be and do them for, you know?
When you say that, Dana, it makes me want to ask, do you think there are certain scripts, like overall messages that you tell yourself that maybe other people, and I think maybe we all have different scripts that we play that contribute to our anxiety. And I would think that because, you know, we're humans, that maybe there are a few or several that seem to be common to people who struggle with anxiety. Are there certain scripts, certain messages that you tell yourself? And I'm even trying to think what I hear in what you're saying right now.
Mm-hmm. So I've always, I think I've always believed that my value was tied to my productivity.
Okay. Where do you think that comes from?
My mom gets done. I mean, girl can get done. I mean,
she can get things done.
She really can. Okay. She can get things done.
All right. There's some other language being said under her breath there.
And I think that some insecurity in my early life led me to sort of be somebody who, well, I can do this for you. And if I do this for you, then maybe you'll like me.
Okay.
And I'll feel like accepted and wanted. So as much as I know that that is not true, like in my head and in my heart, even, and it's interesting because I can talk about things that I know to be true a lot. I mean, I can talk about it a lot and I still think there's some like grooves that are carved pretty hard in how I operate day to day.
So interesting, Dana, because it, you know, my like byline or whatever the right phrase is for my Instagram and for my Twitter is, well, I don't know if I have this on my Twitter, but a human being, not just a human doing. And because I can relate to that, that there's this, your self-worth being related to what you do, what you can produce, how much you can work. And then I'm thinking, I started this discussion with you praising that the very first thing, when I met you, is what you did for me.
Oh, but I also don't think, and I think this phrase I say all the time, I mean, all the time. I think life is always a both and. Like, it's it's not entirely bad to be somebody who does things.
Yeah. Yes.
Period. Right. Or does things for other people. That's not bad.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's bad when you believe that that's what you have to do to have worth.
Okay.
And whether or not you are articulating that or not, doesn't mean it maybe isn't happening inside. Yeah. Right. So there's tension in every aspect of life. There's tension because there's always a both and. I want to be tenderhearted, but I also want justice. I want to be, fiercely loyal, but I also want to be like have good boundaries and take good care of myself. Right. So there's a both and no matter where you look, I want to be loving to my kids, but I want them to know that they must be respectful. Right. So I feel this tension physically in my body when I walk this tightrope that I do. I mean, I walk this tightrope all the time and I'm constantly trying to adjust it and find perfect balance, which I think is a myth, although I think it's okay to keep trying for it.
It's elusive. I think it's a journey, but I don't think we ever.
Yeah.
I think it's a journey worth pursuing.
Sure.
I think
it's worthwhile.
Yes. I think searching for balance and I think the balance and what balance looks like for us changes. Right. Maybe daily.
Right.
But definitely season by season.
So for me, the elusiveness, or the elusive, you know, the unicorn that I'm looking for every day is, if I don't have enough going on, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
If I have too much going mm-hmm. on, I am not happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't, that's going to look different every week, every other week, every 2 months. I'm struggling right now with, do I continue working?
Yeah.
Because it feels like the one thing that I can not do.
Yeah.
You know, everything else is non-optional.
And it's tough to know when that's something that you tolerate until there's...
Right, until it shifts and becomes okay again.
Right.
Because it has been okay at times.
Yeah.
But it's that both and. Like, I like to be doing things. Doing things mm-hmm. keeps me, like, my mind and my heart engaged in my life and in the world around me.
And it's tied to our being.
And I like it. It's part of who I am.
Yeah. I talked about this before, that I think for me, and there's so much I could say about this, but because that productivity was so tied to my self-worth, that I went through a season right after I had Eloise where I really felt like I needed to just be.
Right.
And I had to come back to a place where I could love and appreciate
the doer.
The doer.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so in my office, and I think it looks kind of silly, and I've had a couple people ask me, I went to Michael's a few weeks ago to get ready for Emmett's Harry Potter birthday party.
I saw the powder room.
Oh, right.
Still has evidence. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had, you know, their Christmas paraphernalia on sale, and tied to that, they had these.
Did you buy all the baby Jesuses? Please tell me you made
a
wreath out of all the baby Jesuses.
I did. It's out in the garage. I made a few. I'll give you one. So they had. It'll be your
favorite. I'll totally hang that up.
Right downstairs. Right. Behind a door. So they had these marquee, you know, the lights, right? And all these different letters and things. And I was looking through them, and they were like 80% off, because Michael's will have these crazy sales,
right?
You know, and then you get sucked in. But they had this and sign.
Oh,
just an and. And so I bought it and I put it up in my office mm-hmm. because for me, and I picked this up from my mentor, from just how she was with me, and she's so intentional with language, and I learned a lot about that intentionality, and I think you can be overly careful with that, but, and she never used the word, but
mm-hmm.
it was, and you could see it in her mind. She would be talking, and where you would normally use but, she would say, and...
Yes.
And it was something about that was like, it was healing to me
mm-hmm.
to hear her do that. And yeah. And so it's a big deal to me. This mm-hmm. both and,
mm-hmm.
So I can really resonate with that idea. That
well, I think it's
about.
Both beautiful and, both and it's both beautiful and representative of reality, which is that there's a lot of tension in where we are, which is children of God who are not fully realized yet. You know, we don't live in the kingdom come yet.
Yeah.
We live here and we're trying to bring the kingdom in whatever ways we can and whatever way and opportunities we have. But there's always going to be tension in that.
Okay. So this could sound a little kooky. And... Well, you're saying all of that, and earlier, and I didn't quite have the language for it. I wonder, because you almost tied this both and idea and carrying the tension to your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
This whole concept of the conflict, and I wonder if there's any sense in which carrying the anxiety in your body is almost this prophetic act in the world, where you are carrying this kind of both and that's so countercultural to what is out there.
I mean, that would make it so beautiful. I might make some peace around the anxiety if that were true.
So
I don't know.
Good.
I mean, I'd like to sit with that for a bit and see.
I want to sit with that for a bit too, Dana.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, I certainly believe that God wants to speak to and through us.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, what I'll tell students and people I supervise, and what was told to me, how I was taught, is that to pay attention, that you are an instrument of assessment in the room. Mm. So when you are working with someone, to be very aware of how you feel in your body, mm-hmm. in your emotions and things you're thinking, there's a really good chance that other people in this person's life might feel that way too around them.
Right.
Or that those feelings might just give you some information.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does make me think there may be some value going back to maybe having some appreciation to this thing that we carry. I mean, I don't think I have the constant white noise you're talking about. And I mean, it runs in my family. I think I do mm-hmm. struggle with the anxiety some. But I like the idea of trying to appreciate it in some way.
Sure. Cause at this point there's very little indication it's going to,
right.
you know, evacuate the building
right.
at any point. But I'm going to do my darndest to get rid
to
of it.
Out.
I mean, I am.
Yeah.
It's
not, yeah, because it's not comfortable.
No, and I mean, I guess if I knew it was serving a beautiful purpose, like I could make my peace with it.
Well, I don't want that idea to minimize the pain at
no,
all. Like,
no,
I don't
no,
want
no.
it to sound like I'm over, like I'm trying to rationalize it, because that, I don't like that
but
idea.
But what if that idea, let's just say that idea is true. And what if that trueness and an embracing of that trueness actually has the power to transform it into something that is no longer uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's possible.
Yeah.
It's improbable, but it is possible.
You're just saying what we were both thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I mean, it is. It's,
yeah.
There's always possibility, mm-hmm. you know, for hope to get in and work a miracle.
Yeah.
I
like that idea, for hope to get in and work a miracle.
Yeah. Right. And again, I mean, I'm also a rule follower. So if you tell me you need me to do a certain thing or a certain number of things or a thing a certain way.
Yeah.
My instinct is going to be to sort of tense up, brace myself, and do it right. Like, just do it right. You were told, you know, you're told how to do it. And
so doing things right is also,
yeah, it's a problem for me.
Is that, cause that sounds like perfectionism. Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I was 26, I was diagnosed with, adrenal fatigue,
okay.
which, you know, you can get from just needing to perform and do everything
yeah.
perfectly. But I was also at the time was involved in a church plant, and I was in a really yucky, spiritually, emotionally abusive, relationship with a mentor type figure. And, so there was a lot going on in that. And part of that was my, like, someone told me that I could do something better in my relationship with God. And so I needed to get it right. And so if there was better available to me,
right.
I was going to pursue it
yeah.
and I was going to do my damnedest to get it right.
Yeah.
And I let it go for years. I mean, literally at least 3 years I was in, probably longer. I honestly have blocked a good bit of it out.
Yeah.
But I ran myself into the ground physically and certainly emotionally. It has had and continues to have negative impact on the way that I engage with certain things that I feel like God has for his people, her people, that I sort of recoil from. And I think that's part of, you know, all of that, of course, I think plays into this. I mean, every part of your personality and your being, but certainly it plays into the anxiety.
Do you have any examples? Like, I'm wondering, like, what kind of things were you told, if you do this, you need to do this? This is how you get better. This is how you get more spiritual, or how you
So we would, and again, like, some of it, I'm going to say it, and some of it sounds lovely and was lovely.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, we should all be spending more time just praying and being together in front of the Lord, and it should look like this.
Okay.
So it would be, you know, 2 to 4 hour once a week, sort of prayer and worship sessions where you would kind of try to work something up.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally we would come back and try to, you know, share some of the things that we heard or saw. And like, I love the practice of Lectio Divina where you, you know, just marinate in a small section of scripture and then try to share things that you may have heard or seen during that. Like, I think there's a lot of beauty and a lot of truth into it in what was happening, which is, I think, part of why it ended up being so damaging and why I stuck with it for so long, was that there was enough truth in it, enough goodness in it, that I wanted it. I wanted to be somebody who would be willing to, you know, give somebody $1,000 to fix their car when I was making $18,000 a year. Right?
Right.
I wanted to live that kind of beauty and community and trust.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the kind of person who, you know, would spend hours and hours and hours and lose sleep just to be with God because that's what made God happy.
Mm.
Right? So I did it. And I, you know, didn't do it right. And it made me sick physically, you know, and then has all those, like all the fallout, you know, for years afterward. So, but some of that is good. Some of that has, some of the good parts of that is that my radar is super attuned to what I would call spiritual manipulation now. The negative side of it is I think there's real truth and beauty to, you know, God wants to say things to us and give things to us and communicate with us. And it's harder for me to listen now in certain ways.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Right. So.
Wow. That's just that whole idea. There was just enough beauty in it to draw you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those other pieces, I don't know if it's the context or the interpretation or the rigidness around it or.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I'm a rule follower. So if you give me some rules, I'm going to do them, man. I'm going to do them hard.
Unless
I don't like them anymore. Seriously, but this is part of what has made me. And I think I'm leveling out a little bit, but for a while in my adult life, I was.
Because you have a voice.
Well, for a while in my adult life, I was super harsh about calling things out.
Okay.
That I saw as wrong.
Kind of like in response to that season.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And sort of like this freedom and rebellion. Mm-hmm. Not even, it didn't intend it to be rebellion, but I think that's what it landed on. But I was like, hell no, I don't have to do everything that everybody tells me to do. And, you know, I wanted that freedom so desperately from having to follow all the rules that I definitely, and I think this happens in so many areas and to so many people, I think it's real natural that I just sort of swung the other way and I was like, I don't follow rules, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope my desire is that now it is more tempered and that I am like have a strong voice for sure.
Like with parent teacher conferences.
Right. I don't do that.
Not for 2 year olds.
Not for 2 year olds.
Just hand me the sheet.
That's right.
I
want to honor and respect this. Like, I want to hold a place for honoring and respecting people, even if I disagree with their rules or their desire for certain boundaries. And I have been trying very intentionally. And again, that's something that I think I'm not always great at. But my desire and my intention has been to get in trouble less for saying the first thing that comes to mind and to, try to listen and understand and then decide to either fall in line or to try to respectfully not fall in line.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always happen. I mean, I can be very impulsive in what I say.
Well, my experience is that you hold that space and that tension really well. That's been my experience. Yeah. I mean, you have a voice and it can come across as a strong voice.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it's something that I've appreciated. And I don't know. I mean, did you have that like in high school or, I mean, did you have that earlier or do you think that really developed after your experience of the spiritual manipulation?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's very, very difficult for me to reflect back on any of my school years and certainly on my childhood. And I don't think I have an accurate understanding of either how I was or how I was perceived.
Okay. Okay. So this is a question I have related to your voice. Sometimes I feel like for myself and working, and I'm thinking about women, but I think it's probably rings true for men as well, that, and it is not everything. It's not, this isn't the end all be all. And I found that increased anxiety and depression is so often tied to a stifled voice. And that when someone can find their voice and learn to use it, because, you know, I think we often think about using our voice in one of two ways, either not at all, and mm-hmm. so we're completely passive, or we do swing that pendulum over and become aggressive, or we interpret assertiveness as aggression because right. we've been on the passive side for so long,
mm-hmm.
that helping ourselves get accustomed to having a voice and using it maybe initially bring on more depression and anxiety, but mm-hmm. over the long haul can work to alleviate mm-hmm. it, or I don't know.
No, I think that's true. I think that what I would say is that there's a couple different kinds of anxiety that I experience.
Okay.
One is anxiety that's tied to a relationship or to, okay. it's tied to something.
Yeah.
A conflict, something I don't feel good about, something. And then there's what I call that white noise. And it's just there.
Yeah.
It's there even if I feel like I'm at peace with the world.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Right. And that distinction, I think, is really important and incredibly valuable.
I mean, I might be the only one.
No. I think that's true.
Those anxieties that are, the anxiety that's tied to something is what I would call, like, when it spikes. Like,
okay.
So then, but those usually have a path. Like, I can do something and eventually get some resolution on that anxiety.
Okay.
Right? So even if it's something I don't want to do that does temporarily make the anxiety worse,
mm-hmm.
like have a conflict or make a choice that I don't want to make, but needs, you know, it will almost always, in my experience, amp it up temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
But then either it's the right thing and I've done all the sort of good and right and true right things that I can, mm-hmm. that I'm aware of, and therefore it brings some peace, you
mm-hmm.
know, or I have lingering anxiety and I realize I did something that wasn't best in it.
Okay.
And I can go back and, you know, eat another round of humble pie and
yeah.
bring some resolution to it and get some peace that way.
Okay.
So again, it like the anxiety spikes, it's mm-hmm. tied to something. I walk the path, the anxiety spikes even higher
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, resolves.
Okay. I think I follow that. So related to the spike or that white noise, I guess I wanted to ask you to share some things, whether it's related to diet or, and you've mentioned some things already, but what have you used to manage?
What have I tried?
Mm-hmm.
So I've mentioned that I tried, you know, medicine. It was Zoloft. At the time, for me, I would describe it as, the Zoloft helped me. I would wake up every day, and I told Doug it was like waking up and staring at a brick wall. Mm. I could not make any progress at all. And when I started taking the medicine, I felt like it took that brick wall and it turned it into a steep mountain. Like my days were still hard.
Yeah.
But I had somewhere to go.
Okay.
Like there was some space in me to do the hard thing versus being like walled off.
Yeah.
And not feeling like there was anything I could do. So that helped for a while. But I didn't want to be on meds for, permanently. And I don't now remember it getting rid of the anxiety. Like, I remember it helping I think I was depressed.
Okay.
Postpartum depression.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't remember that anxiety not being there.
Okay.
It might have, which is why I'm considering trying it again to see if it helps this. Because I'm also in a different place hormonally and...
Yeah.
Physically.
Which matters too.
It does matter.
Yeah.
It does matter a lot. So I tried that. I'm thinking about trying it again. I have at times taken like a really high dose of certain herbs, St. John's wort, fish oil.
Right.
I did not notice a difference with that. I can tend to be someone who gives up after a while, like if I'm doing it for 4 or 6 weeks and not seeing any results, chances are I'm going to probably forget and stop doing it.
Right.
So then I always wonder, like, was it the 8th week where it would have kicked in?
Right.
Right. But since I don't know, it's hard to sort of get back on that protocol. The current thing that I'm doing is dietary restrictions. So cutting out carbs and dairy and alcohol, and then adding in these, supplements that are supposed to fight yeast and inflammation.
Okay.
So the doctor that I'm seeing thinks that a lot of, I have chronic headaches that last for, 4 to 6 days at a time.
Do you have one now?
I actually, for the first time, was able to get rid of the one that started this morning.
Okay.
Which came from working out yesterday.
Okay.
So they're tension headaches mostly.
Yeah.
I've literally never been able to do it before, but she showed me some stretches. And so that one, I feel like I'm like a walking miracle because I woke up with it this morning. It's a one-to-one. Like anytime we do anything with shoulders or upper back, burpees and push-ups.
Yeah.
And yesterday we did overhead presses and a ton of plank. And I knew, like, as we were doing it, as I read the workout, I'm like, I'm going to wake up with a headache tomorrow.
Okay.
And I did. And then I stretched it out. So that's good. But yes, so she thinks some of the chronic headaches might be from inflammation.
Okay. Okay. So you're going to work on that next.
So I'm
working on that. Yeah. Maybe that's
but again, I mean, maybe, yeah. And again, there's a whole additional list of dietary things that she wants me to do that I am incapable mentally of doing. She has this list of foods that are acidic versus foods that are pH neutral.
Okay.
And she wants me to eat based on that.
Okay.
And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. I just can't right now.
It would seem like it would be really tough with the kids.
It's really, like I'm already... Mm-hmm. Having to make all of my own food mm-hmm. all the time, which is fine. Most of the world does that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also working and it's overwhelming. And I'm like, I just know that if I try to do that, I will faceplant hard and stop doing any of it. And to me, it's better to be on the Whole 30 and at least be making a dent in it.
Right.
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 'Cause that I can do. That's easy for me now.
Yeah.
So
my neighbor, she struggles with migraines, and they, I mean, she'll have countless migraines mm-mm. every month.
No.
And they've done different dietary restrictions with her. The most recent thing that she's done, and I haven't talked about it much in the last few months, but they have done Botox injections.
Interesting.
And she still gets migraines, but significantly fewer every month.
Interesting. Has she tried marijuana? I've heard that can really, I'm not kidding. I've heard that can really help.
I haven't asked her that data.
I know, since it's not legal yet. Medical marijuana, man. If it could help you, Now I have a migraine.
I'll try to remember.
15 or 16 days. I don't know. You might want to edit that part out. Just curious.
You know,
migraines. I mean, my headaches are awful enough, but they are not migraines.
Okay.
I mean, they're bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're fatiguing. It's just, it's hard to be cheerful by day four when you're like, this actually probably isn't going to go away for another 3 or 4 days. Right. I'm probably going to have to get a massage in order for it to go away.
I mean, that just can't help but affect your mood.
It totally does. Right. It totally does.
So I'm kind of impressed then because I'm always so happy to see you.
Oh,
and
yay.
You are just a joy to be around. And I know the last time we hung out, I think you did have a little bit of a headache. And
yeah.
And so
it's the pain is always recedes some when I'm
with people
doing something fun.
Okay. Well, so. You're able though to manage the anxiety, that white noise, and the pain.
I will say the anxiety often makes me feel like
and be nice to people is what I'm saying.
Oh,
and be a delight to be around. Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's a lovely compliment. I do often feel like the anxiety makes me interact with a limp, so to speak, socially, because I often feel like a deer in the headlights, like just emotionally, where I just, some of it is parenting small children. And I feel like I call it being assaulted. I just feel like I'm being assaulted almost all the time.
Oh, I will feel that way. I felt it today, actually.
Yeah. So good. It doesn't get better. Awesome. Super encouraging.
Okay. I'm thinking of my littlest.
Okay.
Who is right in the same age range as yours. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I did not feel.
She's strong.
She's very strong.
She's strong and mighty.
Yeah, she is. I can still feel a little assaulted by my two
littles.
Well,
just sheer numbers, right? I mean,
you
have four, I have three. So I understand that there's a number, there's a magnitude.
Yeah. My oldest.
It's never going to go away.
Tends to, and it's, I think, it's her personality. She just does her thing.
Yeah.
And she'll, like, bedtime, literally, she's gone. And at some point, she'll open the door and just say, "Good night, Mom. I love you." And,
oh, wow.
And there's, and John and I've, like, we've admitted that there's been times, and of course she's older, but we had to stop ourselves because we're like, we want to do that thing that you're so not supposed to do. Why can't you just be like
your sister? But does no part of you think, you don't need me anymore?
Yeah.
Because so many other people still need you. That's probably why.
No, you know what? She
does.
You don't
need me to and tuck you in.
She does in other ways.
Okay. It's different.
It's different. Oh, yeah. She definitely still needs me.
Yeah. So, oh, no. I know she does.
Oh, but I just
wondered if.
Yeah, that part doesn't really bother me
because
it's moved on to other things that are really meaningful. So.
Yeah.
I mean, you end up having a unique relation, special relationship with all of them. But so yes, most of the assault is with the youngest, but my two middles who are 8 and 11 do their fair share.
Yeah.
Just not in other ways.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
Yeah.
So I think that often makes me feel like when I walk into a group setting, I feel very like deer in the headlights, right? I feel like I've been through a ringer and that surely you must be able to see it on me.
Mm-hmm.
Like what these people just did to me.
Right.
And what I may have done in return yesterday was like this horrible morning. And, I mean, it was just flat out awful. We haven't had a morning that bad in a really long time. And by the time I dropped everybody at school, I cried. I bawled for at least an hour afterward. At just my own awfulness, you know. And then I was listening to.
So they assault you to the point where you act. I mean, this is how it is.
Where you respond,
then you get you get it going and coming, you know.
But then I feel like my job as a parent is to teach them how to stay calm in the midst of big storms and big emotions.
Sure.
And I failed so hard yesterday. I'll have regularly, like embarrassingly regularly, I'll have small failures. You know, I'll temporarily lose my cool. But I lost it super big, not quite as big as the time where I slammed Callan's door frame so hard that I knocked it off.
Oh my
I knocked the trim off the wall.
Oh I'm impressed. That for that
you should be. Actually, our handyman came and said it wasn't attached to anything, so that should make you feel better. Like he's like, it was just sort of floating on the edge of the wall. And I'm like, how does it even work? He's like, I don't know. But you're not, you know, like a monster.
You're not that strong.
I'm not the Hulk.
Right. Right.
That was a fun conversation to have with Doug. Welcome home. I knocked the door frame off of Callan's door today because I got angry. But I mean, most of the time I'll have these like flashes of anger. I did not know I had so much anger until I had multiple children, not one child. One child was fine.
Okay.
But multiple children.
Do you think the anger's tied to your anxiety?
Could be. I don't know. I think it's tied to my children, but.
Because I feel like when I'm anxious, I'm edgier and my fuse is shorter.
I mean, yeah, no, it totally could be. And I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, I feel like that rage, you know, came out yesterday and I took a car seat and I just shook it as hard as I could. And then I just walked away and left all of my children crying in the car. And then, you know, had to come back and apologize, but I wasn't able to apologize sincerely enough because I was mm-hmm. still mm-hmm. just, you know, really deeply angry
yeah.
that it took my 3.5-year-old 28 minutes to put his shoes on. Mm. I mean, 28 minutes of screaming, following me around from room to room, refusing to go to school, refusing to get in the car. And then it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to justify my actions, which were wrong. But then on the way over here tonight, I was listening to an On Being episode with Eula. Don't even know her name. I'd never heard it before, but it was on, the topic was whiteness.
Oh yeah. I've seen that. I haven't listened to it yet.
Who writes about
it just
whiteness.
Came up recently in the last week or two.
I think it's mm-hmm. a new one or I mean a recent one. And at some point in there she said, and I love that she was saying that sometimes she thinks we worry too much about what we're saying. And so it stops us from having conversations that we need to have because we're worried that we're going to say something wrong and offend someone.
Right.
And she said, and so I love that. And then yeah. she also said, I think that if you don't allow space, this is not, I'm not directly quoting her. I think if you don't allow space for anger and rage in the conversation, then no one's going to actually learn anything.
Wow.
And I had texted two girlfriends yesterday to say like what a horrible day I was having. And, you know, just generally let someone know that I might be a danger to my own children. And I texted them and I was like, see, I was just learning. Yesterday I was just learning. I had rage and therefore I was learning. And I'm saying it jokingly, although I did learn a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought earlier today I was thinking about how you don't make any big changes until, you don't make any real change until something becomes uncomfortable enough.
Wow. Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and we started doing some things differently in our morning
mm-hmm.
that I hadn't been, some I hadn't been aware of and some I hadn't been willing to do. And we just, you know, yesterday was just so awful. I just looked at Doug and I was like, I gotta try something.
Right.
I have to put some sort of practical things in place to try to see if this could be less awful for me.
Yeah.
Because even on the mornings when I managed to not entirely lose it on my children, I'm not pleasant and relaxed either. You know, getting three little people out the door.
Oh, it's
on time oh for my, anything.
Oh my goodness. Right.
Is Are so they, hard.
Yeah, we start at 6 o'clock and we do not get the last child out until 9.
Right.
And so, and yeah, it's a, so by then I already feel like, okay,
I've done this hard thing and now I should be able to be done. Right.
Right. Okay.
Nap time, like, snack time. I don't
50%
know.
50% of my work today is over.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, mornings are just yeah. flat out awful.
But you said that just try something. And I think that is what I try to get through to myself, whether I'm struggling with anxiety or some low grade depression, is just try something. And sometimes I think, yeah, there can be this paralysis of analysis of trying to figure out the right thing.
The right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And I just think sometimes I just got to do something.
Something.
And it will wiggle, it'll niggle it some way mm-hmm. that will just get me unstuck a little bit.
Right.
You know? And I think that's But yeah, you just said so much that I think is important. The place of anger and the usefulness of it, and also the, you know, being uncomfortable and what, even appreciating the discomfort and what that. Oh, now I'm gonna have to go listen to that podcast.
It's so good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'll need to re-listen to it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's really good. Most of hers really are. Well, I know. I was just thinking we probably need to wrap this one up.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk all night.
Right, I know we could. We could talk all night, and I think there's probably more here. We could do a whole other one on parenting and marriage and who knows what else has come up. But thank you for being willing just to talk. And I, you know, we have this topic, but I think I told you that, I kind of share this idea of there being this topic, and I'm always curious to see where it'll go.
Sure.
So the tangents are welcomed.
Okay.
Yes. I
brought them.
I was kind of hopeful for them.